Fun than a human being should be allowed to have, ladies and gentlemen. Talent on loan from God. Our telephone number, 800-282-2882. Last night I was asked if it is getting to the point in Iraq where the climate makes war prohibitive. And I want to take just a few precious and spare moments here to say something in total support of the U.S. military. You know, I'm amazed how the record, the U.S. military, is one of awesome competence. The record of the U.S. military is second to none in the world. Therefore, how people can assume that we will lose anywhere we go is beyond me. There simply is no evidence of it. We don't lose. And we don't lose because we're the best. And we're the best with a volunteer force. That means there are people who are doing it because they love it, people doing it because they're committed to it, people doing it because they want to do it. People go to the Army and the Navy and the Air Force and the Marines for the same reason other people choose other careers. They want to go where they can be the best they can be. And it will show itself to be the case whenever hostilities commence in Iraq. This notion that the weather in Iraq makes our effort somewhat hampered. We've been there for how many weeks now? Six? Most of the troops, maybe even longer. We have climatized. We have acclimated to the climate. But we train in all weather, not only around the world, but in the United States. It's not that the United States needs specific weather conditions in order to be able to fight and win wars. Just because we don't, we have deserts in America, and we train in them. We conduct war games in deserts. It's not as though we're going to the desert for the first time in our lives with this currently constituted military force. This is the best equipped and the best trained military in the world. Historically, it's the case, and it's the case now. And I don't want to go on record with any predictions, because who can know? But I'm so confident, I'm so optimistic about our military force because of the people who are in it, both at the officer and the enlisted levels, that I don't see this being really much of a protracted conflict. And protracted may be a bit of an exaggeration. I don't see this lasting much. Well, I don't want to put days on it, but I think we'll be able to measure this in days, not weeks. Let me just put it that way. I think, again, the doubters and the detractors, not only in this country and around the world, are going to be dazed. I think they're going to be stunned. I think they're going to be overwhelmed at a number of things. How proficient our troops are. How quickly they act. How soon it's over. I think people are going to be stunned to learn what has been going on in Iraq for the last 4 years, for the last 10 years. I think people are going to be amazed. I think that those who have stood in solidarity with Iraq and with Hussein are going to be so profoundly humiliated and embarrassed that many of us are going to stand up and cheer at their humiliation. I know I'm going to want to, because it's going to be so richly deserved. I mean, I can understand being an American and disagreeing with certain policy, and I can understand being an American and having arguments over the best way to accomplish our common goals and our common desires. I can understand our arguments and our disagreements when it comes to things like that. But to actively seek our defeat, to hope that we lose, to see harm come to the people who wear the uniform simply to be victorious in a political idea, or because you have a hatred or a dislike for the current administration. That, to me, is uncalled for, and I understand it given the current climate, but I'm never going to accept it. It's outrageous beyond the pale, but yet there are people who harbor these desires. They're hoping for a U.S. defeat and U.S. humiliation, all because they think it'll be the end of George W. Bush, and there are people rolling the dice that that's going to happen. They're betting their political future on it. I'm glad they are. because they're going to lose, and they're going to lose big, because I'll guarantee you something, folks. The United States military, people who command it, and the people who follow those orders are once again going to make this country burst with pride. People are going to be popping buttons with pride and honor over the work these people are about to do. It happens every time they're used. They always exceed expectations. They always perform above and beyond the call. They don't leave. They don't go AWOL. They don't do these things that it is always predicted they will do. And the casualties will be there. I'm sure there will be some, but not nearly as many as those who are obsessed with negativism are predicting. It's only a matter of days now, apparently, and it appears now, if we can believe everything we're hearing today in advance of the president's speech tonight, there still is a chance to avoid all this, and that is if Saddam Hussein and his cabal of leaders pack up and leave and go into exile somewhere. And supposedly he is going to be given 72 hours to do that. And your guess is as good as mine as to whether or not he'll accept this offer. The conventional wisdom is there's no way he'll do that. He'll stand and die and fight to the death and blah, 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 blah. But I don't know. I'm not so sure. I'm of the opinion he actually thought he could stop this. I think the French and the Germans are, when this is over, there will be blood. And I'm going to tell you on whose hands that blood will be. It'll be the French and the Germans. Because this war was not necessary. Had the French and the Germans simply gone along with what, well, the diplomatic route at the United Nations and had a unified show of force from the United Nations actually occurred, then Saddam, no doubt, would have realized the truth and seen it for what it is and acted accordingly. But he has been given false hope and a false sense of security ever since December 8th, when he was allowed to present a false declaration to the United Nations under the terms of Resolution 1441. And ever since then, the French and the Germans have gone out, for whatever reasons, and we think we know what they are, but for whatever reasons, the French and the Germans have given Hussein false hope that he can outlast this, as he always has, with more fake, phony destruction of weapons, more fake, phony inspections. But the one thing that wasn't counted on, although it probably was feared, one thing that wasn't counted on was the resolve of George W. Bush, the cowboy. And in regards to that, I want to play a little soundbite here from Dick Cheney yesterday from Meet the Press. Tim Russert says, you know, there's a perception, however, if you read any of the papers in Europe and around the world, a constant description of the president as a cowboy, that he wants to go on alone, that the president and you and the administration, who was perceived as extremely confident in foreign policy, has been stumbling, hasn't reached out and nurtured alliances. And if you mention the president's name, a friend of mine wrote me a letter, Mr. Cheney, said it's like a blast furnace. They just respond saying he just wants to lead the world into war.
With respect to the charge about the president, I just think it's dead wrong. I've gotten to know this man very well. I work side by side with him every day, 7 days a week, 24/7, as they say. He has a great capability that I think is absolutely essential in an effective leader, and that's the ability to cut to the heart of the issue. If I'm looking for analogies, I think of Ronald Reagan, and I think of it as Reaganesque, in the sense that President Reagan understood, for example, some very basic fundamental facts. He went out at one point and referred to the Soviet Union as an empire of evil. Created consternation on both sides of the Atlantic. A lot of hand-wringing. How could you possibly say the Soviet Union was the empire of evil? Well, that was in fact true. It guided his policy judgments. He, in turn, ultimately led the alliance in the right direction, and we ultimately prevailed in the Cold War. I look at President Bush, and I see, for example, his setting a whole new standard about how we're going to deal with terror-sponsoring states. In the past, many of our friends in Europe and elsewhere around the world, when they see a state that sponsored terror, frankly, was willing to look the other way, not to hold them accountable for the fact that they were providing sanctuary for people who were out there in the world doing evil things. After we got hit on 9/11, the president said no more and enunciated the Bush Doctrine, that we will hold states that sponsor terror, that provide sanctuary for terrorists, to account, that they will be treated as guilty as the terrorists themselves of whatever acts are committed from bases on that soil. That's a brand new departure. We've never done that before. It makes some people very uncomfortable, but it's absolutely essential as part of our strategy for taking down the Al-Qaeda organization and for ending the terrorist threat that the United States has been forced to deal with over the years. So the notion that the president is a cowboy, I don't know, is a Westerner, I think that's not necessarily a bad idea. I think the fact of the matter is he cuts to the chase. He is very direct, and I find that very refreshing.
On the subject of Al-Qaeda and terrorism, the president's approach is working. And where, oh, where have the Democrats gone? United States, this is the Washington Post yesterday, United States within reach of dismantling the leadership of the Al-Qaeda network responsible for the 9/11 attacks. Bush administration officials and U.S. intelligence experts said that they are cautious here. They don't want to overstate their optimism about breaking up Al-Qaeda and capturing bin Laden. But people who receive regular briefings on U.S. counterterrorism operations said the arrest and subsequent cooperation under interrogation of the Al-Qaeda lieutenant Khalid Sheikh Mohammed this month have given them concrete reasons to come to this conclusion. Porter Goss, Republican from Florida, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, and a former case officer at the CIA, said, "I believe the tide's turned in terms of Al-Qaeda. We're at the top of a hill now." And his sentiment was echoed by a dozen other intelligence experts and law enforcement officials who have regular access to information about U.S. counterterrorism operations. Goss said for the first time, "They have more to fear from us than we have to fear from them." Still, it was hard for CIA Director George Tenet to hide his optimism. When asked during an encounter in the hallways of his headquarters last week whether he felt the agency had turned a corner in its effort to dismantle Al-Qaeda with the arrest of Mohammed, he said it's a very, very big deal. He and the material that he was apprehended with are extremely useful. It will... No, I can't say anything else. But with an exuberant swing of the arms and his torso and a big smile, George Tenet added, "Look, it's a big deal," before he scooted off down the hall. So the question is, where, oh, where have the Democrats gone? The headline of this story is Al-Qaeda's top prime to fall. But isn't there a shortage of applause from the Democrats? Shouldn't somebody wake up Mrs. Clinton? Remember her myth speech in which she said Homeland Security under the Bush administration is a myth? You know, that speech ought to go down in history with Richard Nixon's Checkers speech. And how about Tom Daschle from last November when he said, "We haven't captured bin Laden, and that's the benchmark by which this is to be judged. I don't see where we're having any success whatsoever in the war on Al-Qaeda. This has all been a waste of time." Whatever it was he said. Where are the Democrats now applauding? Where are they acting in concert with the administration over this good news? They're not saying a word. And the reason they're not saying a word is because they're devastated. Because they have set themselves up to only benefit when Al-Qaeda strikes again. That's the truth, my friends. The Democrats, with all they've said, have been setting themselves up for another terrorist attack so they can point fingers of blame at the administration. They see they haven't been doing it. That's what Hillary's speech was all about, setting the stage for another attack. Well, a problem. We captured Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. We got his computer. They are on the run. There haven't been any other attacks, and there may well be. But it cannot be denied that massive success is taking place. Because we've got an administration led by a cowboy who does what he says and means what he says and follows through on it. And, of course, if you're an indecisive wimp mired in diplomatic approaches to things, of course you're going to be intimidated. Because you're out of a job when things get done. We'll be back in just a moment.
Order the Limbaugh Letter. Get two special reports absolutely free. Call 800-457-4141. Or subscribe online at rushlimbaugh.com. You're listening to the EIB Network on 77 WABC.
Feel great.